Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, we'll talk about the best organic gardening methods on How Homeopathy Helps to Grow Great Gardens, a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Bruck, and international expert agro-homeopath Avi Raj. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community. I'm hoping to speak with my co-host, Kavya Raj, the author of the international best-selling book, Homeopathy for Farm and Garden. Today is December 8th, 2010, and you are listening to show number 8 of How Homeopathy Helps Grow Great Gardens. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We have so much to be thankful for every day, and I want to be sure to let everyone know that we can demonstrate our gratitude with action as we help to save the earth and keep it running in harmony and balance with all of life's cycles. We're going to have some fun today and ask Kavya Raj some general questions after we get started with some study and acknowledgement about what's going on in the world today and in the news. I also want to remind people that there is a daily homeopath newsletter, and Kavya Raj is now one of the contributors. It is the http://paper.li/Debbie Bruck/homeopath. That's kind of long, so just take a look on Twitter for when I post updates to the daily homeopath newsletter, or there's a big red advertisement for the newsletter on the front of Homeopathy World Community. Aesop, in 620 through 560 BC, when he lived, wrote, "United we stand, divided we fall." And that's a pretty cool line. And also, we're going to read today a little bit something from the New York Times. Let me just check if Kavya Raj or any of the folks are able to call in. Okay, it looks like we've got Dr. Bob on the line today, and I just want to acknowledge his presence. I want to thank you, and I'm going to have to probably start up that live chat board for the switchboard, see if that's working. Okay.
Dr. Bob is here.
We've got a few guests. Hi. Hi, Rob. We are going to be live and waiting for Kavya Raj. You know, he's a world traveler, and now he is in Toronto, Canada, and he's going to try and get on the line. In the meantime, I think that this is a time of awakening of our spirit. I feel as if the tide is turning on all fronts. For homeopathy, especially, for alternative medicine, for natural ways of living, to getting back to the earth. And there's an important article in a major news publication that highlights a new perspective on living and lifestyles, how we can commune with nature and work in harmony with our environment. Nature gives back when we provide what Mother Earth needs to keep cycles in balance. And I'm going to send people over to a fantastic article on the New York Times called Farmers Find Organic Arsenal to Wage War on Pests. It's almost as if the people who wrote this article had been speaking with Kaviraj, who has been doing this for his lifetime, about organic gardening and finding ways to live in harmony. And yet in yesterday's show, I talked about how we can, those people who are having difficulty with celiac disease, asthma, and ulcerative colitis can actually imbibe. They can take hookworm eggs and another kind of egg, worms, that will inhabit their guts and actually alleviate all of their problems. I don't know whether you listened or were able to read that article or know about it. So we're going to go ahead and read the article from the New York Times by Mark Van Horn, who is the director of the Student Farm at the University of California. And he nearly lost as he is nearly lost as he walks through a yellow cloud of wild sunflowers, it says in the paper, around the edge of a field of tomatoes and sweet corn. So it's a different way of gardening. They aren't here for the beauty or as a cash crop. They are a key pest control strategy down on the organic farm. Research on wild sunflowers, says Mark Van Horn, shows that they are home to lady beetles and parasitic wasps, which are good bugs that kill bad bugs. You have any comments about that today? Are you still here? Can I hear you?
The reality is that we've known for an awful long time that there are natural pest controls out there. Okay, very often we call them hyperparasites. Hyperparasites, okay. H-Y-P-E-R, meaning above the parasites. Okay. And basically, parasitic wasps, ladybugs, praying mantises.
Love praying mantises. Those were endangered at some point.
Yeah, well, they were being wiped out by pesticides. They're very sensitive to pesticides. But we've known that when those kinds of organisms inhabit a field, they are, in fact, destroying the aphids, the thrips, the various kinds of feeding beetles that are out there. This is natural pest control. And, of course, if you're an organic gardener, these are exactly the kinds of things that you are trying to encourage in your field. And, you know, of course, that's antithetical to the reality that most farmers, conventional farming, uses chlorinated hydrocarbons and all kinds of very, very nasty compounds that were basically invented during World War II for chemical warfare and modified into pesticides that kill everything. They're biocides. Mm-hmm. So when you go into a field and you lay it over with parathion, malathion, 7, these insecticides are going to basically annihilate all insect life in there. And for an awful long time, we called that good, in quotes, because we got rid of everything. But in fact, we found that as the bad insects gained resistance to those compounds, you had to use more and more and more of the insecticide, and it was a diminishing return because you were wiping out the good things. The bad things were becoming resistant to it, and the actual pesticide had less and less utility over time. Whereas the hyperparasites, those things that eat the bad insects, have always been there. They have co-evolved, and in fact, they work. It's been proven over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we're very, perhaps many organic gardeners are familiar with the fact that we can actually purchase ladybugs through the mail.
Yep.
And have those delivered to our home or our farm and spread them around. And I don't know whether they live year to year once you start putting them into your garden?
Yeah, they
or
actually
you
do.
Have,
they,
you have...
they lay their eggs in the soil, and they will hatch out the following year. So that's a perennial insect that will that will disappear during the winter, but next spring they're going to come back again. So these are things that once you establish them in a field, along with things like praying mantises, which do the same thing.
They will do the
same
thing?
That's correct. They lay their eggs in the soil, and they'll come back the next year. And the reality is that you're creating an integrated pest management system. You're being able to use the natural organisms that are found in nature. You are encouraging them in your field, and in fact, you end up with a very stable situation.
Right. So you're actually enhancing and creating an environment, an ecosystem within your garden. And unless there are winds that are bringing in pesticides or the waters are contaminated in your neighborhood and they are coming in and contaminating your stream, then you're going to have like a little oasis, a little paradise in your own garden, like your own fishbowl.
Right.
By right. enhancing the relationships between the different organisms that are in, that are flying around in the air, that are pollinating, or are the ones that are controlling the pests and the plants. I wonder whether the plants, they must be very thankful for having it this natural ecosystem. So perhaps they are growing better too.
It's been proven over and over. I mean, I'm reading from the New York Times article right now from this guy from Davis, Mark Van Horn. And Davis, of course, is probably the number one or two agricultural research station in the world. And he says, years ago, we were considered to be kooks, anyone who was involved with this research. And that's absolutely true, but things have changed radically over that time. It goes on to say, a paper published in Nature, of course, is, along with Science, are two of the most prestigious scientific journals in the world. This year confirmed what organic farmers have long suspected, that conventional farming can make a pest problem worse. Okay, we've known that for a long time, but, I mean, let's get right down to the bottom line. The chemical companies who sell tens of billions of dollars worth of these products every year really don't want people to know that. You know, we call it the miracle of conventional agriculture. The United States has led the world in the highest yields and the greatest productivity. But what they're not saying is that every year that you use these conventional ways of dealing with fungi, with insects, bacteria, herbicides, you are destroying a little bit more of that ecosystem, sterilizing the soil, eliminating the natural biodiversity of these positive organisms, both in the soil and on the plants, and you're simply making it that much more difficult to grow the ensuing crops. So it's unnatural. It's simply unnatural. And this has been pretty much the way things have been done from the 1950s to the present, but there is a huge movement going on right now to turn that around, and it's gaining a tremendous amount of speed. Here at my university, North Carolina State University, we were fortunate about 10 years ago to have an alumnus donate out by a town called Rocky Mount here in North Carolina a 2,000-acre farm, a conventional farm, to the university. And it was decided that they were going to convert that entire farming operation into an organization called the Center for Environmental Farming Systems. Again, 10 years ago, this was on the fringe of agricultural science. Dr. Nancy Creamer is the director of that. And again, 10 years ago, she would be considered to be a kook. Today, she literally is being invited around the world, and we have people flying in from every continent weekly to take a look at this farm that she has developed there. It took 4 years to have it certified as, quote, organic. Any kind of a normal field that's been in production has to lay fallow for 4 years, no herbicides, no pesticides.
It has to lay fallow for 4 years.
Okay, and then it was certified by the USDA as being organic, and they developed this over 2,000 acres into virtually every crop. We have 129 commercial crops in North Carolina, and they are growing everything there without an ounce of chemical fertilizer, pesticide, herbicide, anything. And the yields and the quality of what they are growing there is mind-boggling. And again, using all of these natural systems the way nature intended it to be, not only can they prove that if you do it right, and by the way, I don't want to diminish the fact that it takes a lot of work. Okay, again, where do we get our nutrients from in the soil? We use manure, we use cut mulch from plants, and we are constantly building up the organic matter in the soil. Bringing in cow manure and horse manure and things like that, and that works, okay? In other words, you can, once you get an established organic system, be able to create a farm, whether it's an acre or 10,000 acres, that is totally sustainable. The plants get all they need. The natural flora and fauna in the field, the natural organisms in the soil, which have not been destroyed by the pesticides, come back. Nature takes care of all that. You don't have to do anything other than letting nature take its course, and you end up with an incredibly sustainable system producing certified organic produce. And I think that the point is that we are in this mindset and have been that in order to grow organic food, yeah, it can be done, but two things. Number one, it's going to cost two or three times as much as growing conventional food, and even if you do that, the yield per acre, the amount of food you're going to get per unit of area, is going to decrease as compared to conventional agriculture. That's what we believed for the past 30 or 40 years. That is now being totally dispelled, okay, where in fact
and,
you can
right.
sustainably grow food and not use any chemicals.
Well, for one thing, when you have something that's labeled organic, right away it's going to cost more. At least it is now, because it's a specialty item. Right, it's a specialty item. Until it covers more of the gardening, will the price go down? But right now, it's the farmer is going to make more for converting their gardening practices over to organic growing. And so it's going to be really worth it, and especially if they have heirloom tomatoes or specialty kinds of plants, people are going to pay extra for that. And then, as Kaviraj has always said, the plants and fruits are lush, more colorful, more nutritious, and they're going to be not only better tasting, but the quality and the quantity of the yield is going to be increased. So we can dispel that myth that maybe was put out by the chemical companies that you're not going to be able to get that from natural growing. And the other thing that I was thinking as you're speaking is that what is it called when you put on a new layer of soil? You're enriching and mulching and adding all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So you're getting a deeper depth of soil. There's a special word for that.
Absolutely. Well, you're basically putting humus and mulch into the soil.
Right,
so
but do you know the name, the word that I'm trying to think of?
I'm not sure.
There's permalayer, or there's certain words for the different layers of soil.
Yeah.
Okay, but so basically you're enriching the soil and making a bed for the plants to grow and to put down their very fine hairs on their root system. So you're making it easier for them
basically
to...
You're providing natural food for the plant, and you're also, by mulching the soil and having deep organic matter in your plant bed, what you're doing is retaining water, which is becoming a major, major problem in conventional agriculture. Basically, conventional agriculture, you're using the soil as simply a home for the plant to grow. It's sterile. There's nothing in it. Organic matter has been depleted. The biological diversity has been killed bind nematicides, insecticides, all kinds of things that are put in there. And hence, you have to add lots of nutrients in order to get it to grow. And water is not retained. It simply runs through the soil. It's been proven,
right,
again in environmental farming systems that the more humic matter you have in the soil, 1 inch of precipitation is going to last a lot longer and feed that plant than in a conventional system. If anybody's been following the news and dealing with the issues of climate change around the world, fresh water, and particularly water for irrigation, is going to become worth its weight in gold 10, 20 years down the road. And indeed, water conservation is going to be a major limiting factor to growing crops. We know as a fact, again, this is no longer speculation, that organically grown fields retain more water, give better nutrients to the plants. And honestly, I think the most important thing, we could talk about the kind of anecdotal evidence that it may taste better or may have more vitamins and things, but the real issue that I think we all have to deal with right now, to be perfectly blunt about it, is the fact that virtually 99% of these organic pesticides, and when I'm talking about organic, I'm not talking about natural organic, I'm talking about organic chlorocarbons, hydrocarbons that are formulated by DuPont and Dow and Novartis and all these corporations, which are toxins, kill you. They are carcinogens. If you want to talk about one simple reason without going into all the hoo-ha, by simply eliminating these toxic chemicals from the field, you are being assured that the food that you eat is going to be pure and wholesome and is not covered with these pesticides in which, you know, what's the rubric that everybody says? Well, wash your fruits and vegetables thoroughly. As a matter of fact, that's a lot of BS. In many of these cases, they actually use what are known as sticker compounds on grapes,
uh-huh,
and strawberries in order to have the pesticide stick on the fruit longer,
uh-huh,
so it's more,
uh-huh,
effective. And unless you literally scrub every grape down with a brush and detergent, you are not going to eliminate those toxins from the plant. So I think
that's
scary. More than anything else. Well, it is scary, and of course it's another one of these things that whether it's FDA or EPA, they say, oh, well, it's below the threshold. So long as it's below the threshold, we consider it safe. Having a background in toxicology, I can tell you the bottom line is that when it comes to these organic hydrocarbon pesticides that we use, there is no safe threshold. Everybody who's
right.
exposed to it, some people are genetically predisposed to becoming very sick and getting cancer, others do not. But basically, there is no safe limit to these things. We have simply lived with it in order to grow tremendous yields and feed people for relatively cheap prices. But as you pointed out, this whole idea that you cannot grow food naturally at a reasonable cost is being dispelled by institutes and universities all the time.
Okay, and Kaviraj has come in with us. He's been able to get on the line, and I wanted to also mention that, hi, Kavi. I wanted to tell everybody how my grandmother always told us to eat the skin of all of our fruits and vegetables, and we obviously at that point we didn't need to do this kind of scrubbing and elimination because of these sticky hydrocarbons and other kinds of chemicals that I think we've had a big discussion on Huffington Post with Dana Ullman, how we consider chemical warfare. Actually, it's us against the world in terms of our environment instead of living in harmony with our world homeopathically. And this is the new message that's coming out, and we are really seeing a shift in the perspective of people toward their environment, how to live in harmony with our environment and the microorganisms and the organs and the bacteria and the virus, how they are there for a reason, and that unless if we keep up this mentality of having a war with them and we are using chemicals and blowing them up with chemical bombs that we are really just harming the entire world population and the earth, because we take in and we breathe all of that stuff, or it's in our water and we're drinking it. So it's best to do what's good for the earth and the planet, and we will be helping to heal ourselves. Hello, Kavi. I see that you're calling in from Canada. Can you hear me? I did let you in, but maybe, hello, maybe you can hear me now.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, you're on. You're on the line.
I hear him.
All right.
Okay. Did you hear me in my spiel about my grandma? She said
not
the
exactly. I just came online a minute ago. I heard the last bit of Bob talking, and that was it. But
okay.
You know, in the little thing that you wrote me, there is one line. There simply aren't organic bug sprays that can match the power of the synthetic chemicals, and almost nothing in the way of organic herbicide. Well, with homeopathy, those days are gone.
Yes.
Yeah, we have
with
now stuff that works much
very,
better.
Very
it's more powerful than their stuff, because with us, a single dose will last 3 months, and they have to spray 16 times in the season for each product.
Every week they got to do it, yep.
Yeah, yeah, each product 16 times in the season, and the season is 3 months, 4 months,
yeah,
like
so
that. So that means four times every week, yeah.
So if you talk about
four times every month, and that is just one product, and then they have four pests, four diseases, four fungi, four weeds, and the pests are all, each one is different, yeah. So what are they doing? They are just poisoning everything.
I would like to read a little bit more about from the article. It says there's a small burst of new research into organic farming techniques as a result of the 2008 Farm Bill, which finances a range of agricultural programs at a total of $307 billion. Is that per year? I don't know. For years.
Now it's $20 million yearly, yeah? And it used to be $3 million a year. So $20 million, what is that? That is nothing. That is an hour's income for Monsanto.
Well, it says $307 billion. It says
yeah,
for years.
Yeah, that's over
such,
a period
such,
of how many years?
I'm not sure. It says that's the 208 Farm Bill.
Yes,
let me see.
Says
it says for
need,
years such
but
research
Debbie,
was
Debbie,
financed.
Underneath. For years such research was financed at $3 million a year, and through the funds are still, and though the funds are still minuscule compared with conventional agricultural research, is now $20 million annually for the next few years.
Right. The $300 billion is the entire farm bill, okay?
Okay.
The farm bill is mostly made up of subsidizing American farmers. That's where the money goes.
Exactly.
It is not in research. The $20 million is for research, and as Kavi said, that is a drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
I see. So when people read this, they don't really understand what that number represents.
Right, it's not made clear.
It represents
maybe
five universities each doing a test over one season.
Yep.
Oh, I see. It says it's 20 million annually for the next few years.
Yes.
Okay.
Which
instead of 5 to 7 research grants per year, there's now 24. So they're happy that it's increased from 5 to a
dozen,
which is not really what you say.
Conventional agriculture does 2 dozen in one laboratory.
Uh-huh.
Monsanto,
so we really need to
instance,
pick up the pace.
These guys, they have people 24/7 working there on finding new things, yeah?
Well, just to give you a point, though.
Compared to what the big agribusinesses do, you know, 24 research projects in organic agriculture is nothing.
Right. One of the important things to point out, at least in this country, Kavi, is that a lot of these organic farming systems like we have here at our university does not depend on federal money. We get grants for private foundations mostly to run it because, as you're pointing out, if we had to depend on the federal government to fund real cutting-edge organic farm research, we'd have to wait forever.
Yes.
So thank goodness there are our private corporations and private foundations that are willing to invest in this.
Yeah.
Because that's where a lot of the progress is being made, where the federal money is still going to conventional agriculture.
Mm. I see. Yeah, in Europe, organic agriculture is more popular. And
yes.
There you see, for instance, in Holland, every suburb in every town has a health food store where you can buy organic produce, and about 40% of the farmers are in conversion.
Wow.
That's
yeah,
a
so
high number.
They are fed up.
That's
with,
a very high number.
With,
yep.
with the stuff they get from the big agribusinesses, and they've said, look, you know, we don't want to pay for all this stuff anymore. The environment goes to waste. We are going organic. So 40% of the farmers is in conversion, and 10% or 12% is already organic. Yeah, it's always been. So now in Holland alone, half the farmers are going organic, and it's very popular. Yeah. And
so,
in Germany
so
also these things, they are pretty popular. Although, when I was in Bayern a couple of years ago, I saw that the maize fields are all GMO experiments in the area where I was.
Repeat that again. Where are they GMO?
I was in southern Germany, near the Swiss border, in that triangle mm-hmm. between Switzerland and France and Germany, you know, that little corner there. I saw a lot of... fields with corn, and that was GMO corn, and they were test fields.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so
because
which
the Germans
countries...
allow some tests, and
yeah.
That's about it. They don't allow it on the market yet, neither do the French. Yeah,
I want to
which
make a comment.
Countries are at the, for, which countries are at the forefront of the organic market, the organic gardening and doing that conversion? You mentioned the Netherlands, France,
yeah,
Germany.
Yeah, the Netherlands is pretty much advanced there, and Germany is pretty good too. France is less.
All of Northern Europe.
Yeah, and that's Northern Europe, and in Canada, of course, on your side of the ocean.
In Canada?
Canada is also having quite a large contingent of organic growers. There was a big protest mm-hmm. here when I arrived that Monsanto was trying to get in the GMO oranges here, and everybody said no.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to
okay.
make a comment about this New York Times article again, which is very interesting
yeah.
because it's part of the research that I do.
Yeah.
You know, we keep talking about the hyperparasites, but there's something that Kavi mentioned the last show that's worth discussing. I'm reading again from the article. Organic researchers are also studying the role of soil fertility in pest control.
Yes.
Some studies show nutrient-rich soil may enhance the plant's immune system and increase natural resistance to insects and pests, or
mm-hmm.
provide a home for natural enemies. Organic soil in potato fields that
yeah.
Dr. Crowder studied, for example, has higher level of a natural fungus that kills potato beetle larvae than
yes.
do conventional fields. And this is a very important point, that our soil systems, when they are healthy, and healthy
yeah.
means is that there are literally thousands of different species of microorganisms in them,
mm.
basically increase the immunity of the entire system, so that, again, once you have bad organisms, whether they're diseases, fungi, whether they're insects, thrips, beetles, you have a natural defense system built up in that soil that helps to actually fight those problems. And we've proven that with some research that I've done using soil amendments of natural organisms to take
yes.
conventional fields and make them organic yet again. In other words, you can actually use organic farming not simply by letting things be natural, but by actually adding beneficial organisms to the soil Mm-hmm. And it still is an organic system, but you're increasing the ability of those plants to fight back fungal diseases, insects, et cetera. And some
yeah,
of the results
chemical,
have been just
chemical agriculture, you know, as they normally do it, is actually a bare soil cultivation. There is nothing in the soil but some fungi and some bacteria and some viruses, and they have to survive. And so because they have to survive, they attack the living plant. And if you have sufficient organic material in the soil, then they do what they naturally do, which is decompose. When they have nothing to eat, they will attack the living plant. That's why in the last 50 years, we had so many more new plant diseases. Like barley yellow dwarf virus was unknown before the Second World War. In the literature, you don't find almost any information about it.
No, it's a very interesting point. I mean, basically, in pathology, we talk about parasites and saprophytes.
Yes.
But what you're talking about are what are in between, which are facultative parasites, where under the best conditions, they're not going to do anything. But if you start
under the best conditions, they do what they are supposed to do, which is decompose all the organic matter in the soil.
Those are the saprophytes, but they'll turn pathogenic if they're pushed, and that's an increasing problem, again, of conventional agriculture.
Well, I think they become pathogenic, so-called, because there is nothing in the soil what they normally would work on. Yeah.
Right. One of the big problems that I study here is Pythium. And Pythium is found in just about every soil system, but generally it does nothing. But when you have a very, very poor soil that has been destroyed by pesticides, that Pythium becomes a parasite and ends up infecting the roots and killing it. We actually induce it to kill the roots.
Yeah, exactly. So then, at the moment that you bring in things that are normally part of the soil, then your problems with the parasites also go out the window, because the parasites are busy doing parasitizing what they are supposed to do. They are not supposed to attack living plants. Yeah, they are supposed to process organic matter, and each has its own place in there. Yeah.
Yep.
Now, in modern chemical agriculture, there is nothing in the soil except chemicals. Yeah, so what are they going to do? They have to survive, so they attack the living plant, and the farmers get newer and newer diseases. Yeah, you have now so many new bacterial and viral and fungal diseases in agriculture. Whereas when they would convert to organic, then they will protect their plants against all those diseases, because those so-called diseases are actually not diseases. They are decomposers.
Right.
And they
right.
begin to decompose
right.
living plants, because there is nothing else. So
you
the real problem in conventional agriculture is that the more you deplete the soil and the more poisons and chemicals you put in there, the deader the soil is, and the more dead it is, the more diseases you will get in your plants, because it is simply not healthy. How can a plant survive in the soil like that?
You got it. I love the quote here at the end of this New York Times article. Just let me read it quick, because it says what Kavi just said. This is, again, for the end of the article. The scientific search continues for a blend of systems that will grow food naturally and be good for nature on and beyond the farm field. Quote, that's the holy grail, unquote, says Mr. Van Horn. An agricultural system that mimics the natural system.
Exactly.
And that's
right.
the whole. That's really what we're trying to do.
Yes, that is what we do with. For instance, in homeopathy, we use the companion plants as remedies, because we want to imitate the natural setting. And if we imitate the natural setting, we have fooled nature into believing that everything is all right. And so she will not interfere in any which way.
Yep.
Yeah, but as soon as we try to control things our way, then we get a problem. We get a big problem.
Okay, Debbie, I've got to go give a final exam. So I have to give a final exam, so I'm going to leave you and Kavi to your fun.
Okay.
We're having a great
time. Good talking
to
you folks. Bye-bye.
Thank you for visiting. Kavi, what I'm imagining that this ecosystem, the environmental, agricultural, plant life, and all the organisms that are working with their particular roles, it's a metaphor for human existence.
Yes, exactly. It's a plant society, and the plant society has all kinds of elements in there, just like a human society that you do not directly and immediately see, but that have a great influence. Yeah, it's like in
right.
our society we have telephone and television and internet, and you don't really see it, but it's all there and it has a big influence. So in the same way, the plant society that you see above the ground has underground all these components and parts that are also part of the web of life and without which they could not properly live or survive very well. And so underground you have the elements, you have the bacteria, you have the fungi, you have the viruses, you have the allelochemicals that are secreted by the plants at the moment that they begin to bloom or when they start making fruit. Yeah, different chemicals go into the soil. Yeah, the beginning also, before it gets there, it puts chemicals in the soil that inhibit weeds. Yeah, and it cannot
right.
do that if the soil is poor. If the soil is having nothing for the plant to eat, then the plant cannot develop these allelochemicals, and so you have more weeds. Yeah.
Right.
And you have more
so
problems.
The problem is we're
it's
not nurturing,
more and more
we're
bad.
Not right. We're not nurturing and we're not feeding the natural organisms that are there for our benefit that we are blind to, that we don't realize that are there, that
mm-hmm.
are doing their part to make the system work properly. It's as if we're starving these microorganisms that are there to take care of the plant,
yeah.
and which in turn the plant creates the food for humans, and where it's the cancer mentality of kill it all, just like doing chemotherapy on our bodies, which then deplete our energy so that we are so weak we cannot overcome this disease, instead of nurturing and feeding ourselves properly and providing quality air, water, food, the organics that we're talking about. And it's this the mentality of being in a war, in a conventional war, where we just blanket antibiotics across the board
bombing.
And kill everything, instead and create a sterile environment, not only within our own human systems, in our living environment, which is our air, which is the blue marble, which we know we call it. So what you have to provide
Debbie?
For us? Yes.
Hi, Debbie.
We have
Marilyn.
Another guest. Hi, Marilyn.
How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for calling.
I wanted to make a comment about what you're talking about, and that is that. You know, the biggest argument in the vitamin and supplement field is that because the soil is so depleted, people have to take more vitamins and supplements.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
because they are in short supply in the plants.
Right,
yeah,
because we're not getting it from our food. We don't have quality food.
Unhealthy food produces unhealthy people.
So rather than
right.
treating it, you know, from the back end, what we should be doing, of course, and that's what you're talking about now, is really, you know, putting back into the soil all of the minerals and all of the organisms
that help. The minerals, that's what they've been doing, and
yeah.
that is what is causing the problem. We don't give the minerals. We give the natural substance that contains the mineral as part of its makeup. Yeah, but by focusing on these minerals, that is what they've been doing for the last 100 years. And look what a mess they made. Yeah, so
right.
these minerals are not the important thing. It is healthy food that is the important thing. And healthy food can only grow on healthy soil. So what do you put in there? Compost, 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 compost.
Got
and that's
it.
All
yes,
you
and
need
and
to do.
And we need to compost
have to
ourselves.
Feed the soil
too.
As much as you take out of it. What you take out of it, you have to put back in. And all that stuff that grows above the ground is what you've taken out of the soil. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So there is a process going on. Yeah. When a plant grows, yeah, then you see, okay, you put the seed in there, and the seed begins to grow. First comes the root. Yeah, and it begins to soak up all these components that it needs for healthy living. Yeah, and so then when it rises above the ground and comes up, yeah, all that stuff that is above the ground, and that can be a meter or 2 meters or 3 meters high, yeah, has all been taken from underneath. So what comes up, yeah, you have to put back underneath, because otherwise at some
right.
point it's going to be depleted. Yeah, so nature does that by itself with deciduous trees, the dropping the leaves and all that stuff. All these organic stuff comes down. If you go into a forest, the forest can maintain itself. But we are having plants in the field. We are growing crops. And everything that grows above the ground, we take. And that is, we only take. We don't give anything.
Right.
And because there is no reciprocation, the soils become deplenished and become poor, and as a result, the food that we get from there is less healthy and is less nourishing, yeah. And so we become weaker as a species, and that is what we have done to ourselves. Yeah, the soil is the goose that lays the golden eggs, yeah. So what we
mm-hmm.
want to do is take the golden eggs, but we don't want to feed the goose. And then at some point she says, well, stuff you. I'm not gonna give you any golden eggs anymore. From now on, they will be only iron. Yeah?
Right. Well, if you've created a sterile poultry, you're
yeah.
not going to get the goose is not going to be able to lay any eggs.
Exactly.
If you've taken
and
away
so in the
what,
same way,
what
if you
it.
If you create a sterile soil, then the soil is not gonna grow any food. It will grow plants,
right.
but it's not. It doesn't deserve the name of food because there is no nutrition in it, because we haven't fed the soil. Yeah, so there
it's
is this cycle that we have to maintain. Everything in nature is based on cycles, and the cycles are in balance. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Nature seeks balance. Nature doesn't like excess. Nature doesn't like waste. Yeah, nature is very frugal. Yeah, if you consider that out of a hectare of forest there come about 4 kilos of calcium, yeah, and that calcium is being brought back by the rain and by the leaves that fall on the ground and so forth, yeah, all that stuff comes back into the soil. So there is a balance. There is the calcium cycle. Yeah, a couple of weeks ago we talked about the nitrogen cycle. Yeah, and
right.
So you have the oxygen cycle, and you have the carbon cycle, and you have all these different cycles of nutrients that are taken out of the soil and go into the plant and nourish us, but we have to put it back in there. And if we do that, and then we can maintain everything, and when we maintain everything properly, then everything will be harmonious, and we will have good food, and then the homeopaths will be less busy. But, that's what we want anyway. We cure, yeah, to be less busy.
Right.
Yeah, so we have to
so
cure
I,
also
I
the soils. And we have to cure also the plants. And that is where we can do a lot with homeopathy. But homeopathy is not organic matter. Yeah. So it's not that you put a few remedies on your soil and you will have organic matter. Yeah. It doesn't
I would
work
like
that. So we have
that
to put that in. And that is, If we would play it smart, we would actually get the sewer systems of the cities connected to a septic tank, yeah, and we would create
right.
our own gas, yeah, and the slurry that comes off it is no longer toxic, doesn't smell, and you can use on the land because it's completely antiseptic by that time. Yeah, everything has been taken out by the process of making gas. So these things, bringing the balance. Yeah, put back in what you have taken out, and then you are doing all right. And if we don't, then at some point, the earth is not going to give us any food anymore.
Wonderful, Kavi. I really appreciate that, going off and telling us about all the elements and the cycles and the balance. And for most people, this is a completely new way of thinking, not to just do a supplement and an additive to add minerals to your diet or to add something to the soil, but to actually enhance the ability of what is naturally in the soil to perform its function and role in life, in protecting the plant or feeding the plant or enabling the plant to take up the nutrients through the root system by enabling these microorganisms to live in harmony. In the same way that yesterday's show talked about how in ancient times, or until like 50 years ago, kids went out and played outside and went barefoot and maybe got a little bit dirty with their hands and played in the mud, and they then took in these microorganisms into their system to get into their gut, which helped to line their gut and help them digest so that they did not have asthma or celiac or colitis or any of these things. And now we're learning that these kinds of symbiotic relationships are so important to life.
Yes.
Do you have a comment about that? We have about 10 minutes left.
Well, yeah, symbiosis is actually the whole secret of nature, is that everything is symbiotic. Everything is connected to everything else. What we do to one part, we do to ourselves and to everyone else. Yeah. So, In especially the field where we grow our plants, there you see the symbiosis. You see that in such a way and so close together, yeah, that it's hard to imagine that it could survive in any other way, and it cannot. Yeah, one thing needs another. Yeah, just like in your intestine, you have. A commensal population of they have identified 400 different gut bacteria and viruses and bugs that live in there, yeah. And so
right.
it's a multi-culti society, and it is very harmonious. It tries to maintain balance. So if our if our digressions from normal diet do something, then we get an increase in one of them, and then, of course, the regular doctors blame that as the cause, but it's actually our own dietary indiscretion that caused it. Yeah.
Right.
And so in the same way, the soil is like a digestive apparatus, yeah, that digests all these things for plants. And if so many of the inhabitants there are missing, then it's not going to happen, yeah. And so the plants that grow up from such a thing is, they are like depleted and unhealthy, and they can't give us any nourishment. So under the soil and above the ground, everything also works in a symbiotic harmony. Yeah, because the one plant needs the other, and that's what we see with companion plants. That is a symbiosis between plants. The corn, the potato, and the bean, if you grow them together as the three sisters, why are they called three sisters? Because they're the same family. Yeah, they're the same the same family in the society of plants that are out in the environment. And so these three, they will protect each other. Yeah, the beans will give the potato shade and have the corn to climb up on, and the corn will also give shade to the potato, because the potato likes to grow in the shade. It doesn't like to be out in the field. Yeah, and the bean and the potato protect each other against pests and diseases, and so does the corn. And so these three together, they protect each other all the time. And if you make it in a round bed and you take one third each, and you would twist that around every year, then in the same spot you can grow year after year the three same plants without any problem. Yeah, it's only that you swap them one third to the left or the right as you turn it around in a circle, and in this way your soil will never be depleted. Yeah, and what you take out, yeah, the roots of the beans you leave in there, and the root of the corn you leave in there, and the rest you take out. Yeah, And so the roots of the beans is a nitrogen fixer. So the next year,
right.
the plants that need the nitrogen, they you plant them there. Yeah, you have a circle, and one third is beans, one third is corn, and one third is potatoes. And you know those thirds you make change place each time, and then you can do forever
right.
on the same spot. You can always grow the same stuff. Without the soil getting
depleted. It's the circle of life, Kavi.
Yes,
and
it's the circle of life, and that's why they're called the three sisters. Yeah, because it is
the sisters
that bring the babies in the world, isn't it? The man have never done anything in that sense.
Well, we'll leave the man out of it. They have to be, they're the pollinator. But we have, the circle of life is, very, very important, and it's all about diversity and not a monoculture. And the beginning of the article in the newspaper about the arsenal to wage war on pests began with the fact that the Mark Van Horn, the director of Student Farm at the University of California, was telling that he was walking through around the perimeter of his field where there were wild flowers and edged with tomatoes and edged with corn, and they were not there for the beauty, but they were there as pest control strategy on the organic farm. Therefore, he was using the principle that you are teaching us about the circle of life and diversity, and using the companion plantings of how the different types of flowers enhance the ability of others to survive, protect each other, provide shade, provide the soil enriching parts of the organism. And we only have like another 2 minutes. And if I guess we're going to have to save for the next show all of those burning questions that people have about their garden, as this show turned into something more about survival of the fittest. I want to say, what would we say? This is about the circle of life and living
on the
moon.
It's not about survival of the fittest. It is about cooperation.
Cooperation.
But it's
thank
not
you.
The individual, each for his own. This is such a human concept. Yeah.
Right. So
it is much more important to see how
here.
Does everything work together. Yeah. And if you go into the forest and you want to see the solution to the problems in your garden, then you have to watch how nature does it, and she always does it with cooperation. Yeah.
Uh huh.
The struggle for life is
wonderful.
A hoax. If you go into the forest and you see two trees that grow next to each other, and you stand in between them, and you look up, you see they give each other space. They don't fight for the space. They are not stupid. Only humans fight.
Right.
Yeah. And so
only
they give each other
stupid.
Space. And that is everywhere in nature. Each thing gets its own space and is allowed that space. And is in cooperation with everybody else, because that is the only way to survive. It is when you band together you can survive. And if you try it out on your own, you will perish. Yeah, and then
right.
you see how humans go about, and they all try it on their own, and what happens? They perish. Yeah,
well,
and as soon as they begin
up,
to work with nature, everybody survives. 4,000 years, they have been growing rice in the Far East without any pesticides, without anything. Yeah,
Kavi,
and the soils were never depleted, and they did it their way. And then came the Western ways. Use chemicals and take the straw away, and now they have endless problems in their eyes.
Okay, well, I'm going to end the show with what I began with today: united we stand, divided we fall, which
indeed.
Is a quote from Aesop in 620 BC, and we're going to end the show. I want to thank you so much for calling in today, and we're looking forward to a great show next week.
Yeah, all right.
Take care, everyone.
Okay, take care. Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening to How Homeopathy Helps Grow Great Gardens with co-hosts Kaviraj Vaikuthanath and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to get some sunshine and light up your life in your garden.